Do you feel like you've been dragging your burdens along with no one to help ease the load? Why not take a breather? With Dr. James Dobson on Focus on the Family. Heard weekdays on this station. Focus on the Family can help make your burdens a little bit lighter.
Every adult has had to deal with stress in their life at one time or another. Finances, relationships, school, work, family pressures. They can all adversely affect any adult. But what about children? Can stress be harmful to a child? If it is, what can you do about it? Well, that's our topic today on Focus on the Family. Our host is psychologist and author Dr. James Dobson, and I'm Mike Trout. Welcome to another edition of our broadcast, Doctor.
Well, Mike, we began our program yesterday on the subject of stress in your child, which is also the title of a book by our guest, Dr. Archibald Hart. We begin by talking about the myth of the carefree childhood, the stress-free childhood, that children just sort of float along, and then when they get to be adults, then they get this heavy burden that we all feel.
The kind of childhood that you and I had.
That's
just
right.
Skipping through life with a silly grin on our face.
You know, the truth of the matter is, I didn't have a lot of stress as a child. I'm probably unusual, and it was a different day. It wasn't until I hit junior high school that my world fell apart.
Although you talked about being left by your parents with your aunt.
Yeah, but for a short period of time. And I feel very blessed in that regard. But kids today are going through tougher times. It is harder to grow up today than it used to be. And Dr. Archibald Hart is here again to help us talk about that. He is a licensed clinical psychologist, specializes in stress management. He's an author of many, many books, and we've talked about most of them at one time or another here on the air. He's also my personal friend.
Thank you, Jim.
I'm just delighted to have you here again.
Thank you. Good to be with you.
We're talking about stress in childhood. I have some information in front of me. Nearly 3,000 children in the United States alone see their parents get a divorce each day, isn't it?
3,000 a day.
That is unbelievable. 1,629 children each day are put in adult jails. 3,288 young people run away from home. 1,512 students drop out of school. And 7,742 teens become sexually active every day.
Every day.
The stress level is incredible.
It's enormous. And parents are just not recognizing their children's stress. You know, we have this blind spot, I think, Jim, about our children. They'll do fine. They're okay. And until one day maybe something serious happens. But I think that the average parent is just not aware of the fact that they are laying the foundation in their child's youth for serious stress problems later in life.
You really see stress being related to disease, and particularly heart disease, in terms of the kind of lifestyle we live, and that adrenaline plays a key role in that.
Yeah, the heart disease is the most serious health problem we have. More people die from that than anything else.
I wish you hadn't have said that.
In my understanding, the essence of the stress problem is really over-arousal. It's having too much of that good stuff we call adrenaline circulating in our bodies.
You see us getting
the arousal
addicted
hormone.
On
and
that.
We can become addicted. We are an addicted society. And people who would drop from fright if they thought that they were drug addicts are, in fact, addicted to this powerful hormone we call adrenaline. And that lies behind the type A personality, lies behind the fast-track phenomenon, and is the essential ingredient in all stress disease, whether you look at headaches or stomach problems or high blood pressure or the depositing of fatty substances in the arteries. It's part of this reaction that God created us with to deal with emergency. But life is not an emergency, or at least should not be one long emergency.
So he didn't intend for us to get up on that plane and stay there. Adrenaline is intended to ebb and flow and ebb and
mountains
flow.
Mountains should be followed by valleys.
Yeah.
And the concept of the Sabbath and so forth is the concept of a time for rest and recovery.
And yet people are less exhilarated in the valley and do something to pump the adrenaline back up.
That's right, because when the valley comes, it's too down, you feel depressed. It doesn't feel good. The mountaintop feels so much more exciting. Hmm. Think of all the adrenally arousing activities that children are exposed to.
Right.
Stimulation, noise. I mean, the sound level that has increased dramatically in the last 10 years with electronic boom boxes and so on. Mm-hmm. And the television stimulation and bombardment. Movies have got to be much more dramatic and stimulating to get a reaction anymore. And because we've already up there. And to get any sort of reaction on top of a peak, you got to do something pretty, pretty dramatic.
You know, I watched Alfred Hitchcock's Rear Window a while back, and remember that as one of the best movies of the time.
Mm-hmm.
And yet it moves so slowly. I mean, compared to today's movies,
I mean,
it was pedestrian, and yes. I was saying, hurry up, I get the point, keep moving.
Yes. But you see, we are conditioned then to higher levels of stimulation, and there's an adaptation process going up. And so when you're up at this level of stimulation, that becomes blah, yeah. And you need something even more dramatic on top of that.
You're telling parents to slow their children's world down?
I am telling parents that they have to learn how to, two things, how to lower the adrenaline arousal of their children by reducing the amount of stimulation that they give their children, and secondly, teach your child how to build in valleys of recovery, for recuperation.
Do you remember as a child the first day of summer when you were out of school, taking the shoes off for the first time and going barefoot and feeling the kind of cool sand in between your toes.
I can feel it right now.
Sitting on a lawn someplace,
yeah.
And pulling little pieces of clover out and chewing the bottoms of those. You remember those?
Sure,
kind of
I do.
You can't
do
that
if
you've got gymnastics practice to get to, right?
No, no, no. I watch my own grandkids, you know, baseball, karate, music, and then quickly do some homework, and then maybe a few video games. And they go to bed and they lie there and their eyes are wide open and they are so stimulated, so aroused, they can't get to sleep. And so you have a double jeopardy. You have this supercharged arousal, and now that prevents you from getting adequate rest.
Yeah.
And parents really have to understand this. We will never master stress disease unless we identify the real culprit.
In your book, Stress in Your Child, you indicate that parents are the problem. A lot of the time.
Parents are a problem a lot of the time because parents set the tone for the environment. See, there are two ingredients in childhood stress. The child and how he or she is made up and functions, and then the environment. And the first environment the child encountered is the home environment. And when homes are conflicted, when the home has a lot of anger and hostility and conflict going on, that child's adrenaline is up. That child's emergency system is alerted for the danger. And that child will go to bed and the stress disease process will be at work in its body.
Let's talk specifically about the dysfunctional family and what parents can do. Let's talk about divorce. We said that that's a very, very common source of stress what do we say, 3,000 children a day
are divorced.
And that process is not occurring in one day. It occurs over a childhood. What does the parent who sees that evidence of stress in the child after conflict that has resulted in a separation or divorce, how do they reach out to them? I mean, you can't make it go away.
You can't make it go away. You can't control every life circumstance. But there are lots of things you can do to help a child go through that period and not suffer as much damage. And I'm convinced that divorce is extremely damaging to children.
Okay. How do they help?
You, first of all, make sure that you change things slowly. Sudden change is stressful. That's true for us as adults.
Boy, it really
certainly
is.
Change is stressful because it evokes a whole new set of reactions and defenses and so forth. So parents who, for whatever reason, are divorcing, change things slowly, first of all. Secondly, don't ignore your child's feelings. Children hurt. I was divorced when I was 12 years of age. That pain, that hurt.
You still remember it?
Vividly. It's part of my what I call my unfinished business. And every adult child of divorce has this tremendous amount of unfinished business to take care of it. The anxiety, the fear, the panic you feel when the family begins to disintegrate. And it doesn't matter how conflicted the family is. When finally the step is taken to separate, you have a very, very serious amount of stress in that child.
So important to keep them talking.
Keep them talking, have them share their feelings. Because what I discovered, the frustrating thing for me as a young child, I couldn't talk to anybody. If I wanted to talk to my mom, she was having so much pain, she didn't want to hear what I had to say. And then boys turn inward, which is why boys suffer more stress than girls in the divorcing process. I think that parents can help tremendously by minimizing their conflict in front of the children. Why is it when divorce occurs that parents have got to have so much visible conflict impacting their children? Why can't they be civil in front of the children and go and do their fighting and scrapping around the corner?
It's not rational, though, is it?
No, it's not rational. I know it's
not. Two people out of control with each other.
But, you see, they go to work. That father will go to work, and he'll perform perfectly normally in the work situation. He won't be out of control there. I really think we mustn't just leave parents to think that because it's so intensely emotional, therefore they don't have to worry about exercising control. I think you have to exercise control.
Let me press you a little bit. Do you ever recommend that people who consider themselves incompatible stay together for the welfare of the children?
Absolutely. All the time.
I do, too.
People can change. Incompatibility, Jim, is the given.
Yeah.
It's the given. There's no way males and females can be compatible. I mean, God's created it, so we have total opposites.
Yeah.
There is no such thing as compatibility. Everything is relative. Incompatibility is the given. You have to overcome that incompatibility, and that's the miracle that God works. No, I don't believe that incompatibility is grounds for breaking up a marriage. But the child then, going through all of this, will experience a lot of stress symptoms. I think anything you can do to help that child get extra sleep. In fact, all the techniques I talk about in the book for stress-proofing your child would apply in that situation and would help to relieve the child from the stress consequences of that divorce.
I know you're aware of Dr. Wallerstein's shows that children are actually more disturbed and more stressed 5 years after the divorce than at the time of the divorce. It
doesn't go away, and it goes into adulthood. And the phenomenon of adult children of divorce, I think, is a very, very valid one. And now you see that after the divorce, now we get into the remarriage, the new blended family, that stress doesn't go away. Now you have a whole new set of stressors. You have a step parent who's a stranger who often doesn't like you. It's rare that I meet a step parent who'll say to me, "I really like my stepchild."
I have never. This is a strong statement. Yeah. I have never seen a blended family that did not go through a major, extremely difficult adjustment period. And some of them never made it. Most of just have to live with it.
Yeah, but adjustment is stress for the child, you see. I mean, this is not just purely in the head. That child's body will be responding with lots of adrenaline as if it were life-threatening. And again, it's not as if nothing can be done. I think that we need to do a lot better job in pre-marriage counseling for remarried couples. I think that we put a lot of emphasis on pre-marriage counseling for first-time marriages, but I think if no one should get married a second time without a very, very thorough premarital counseling course.
And yet most single parents, women at least, think of the ultimate solution to their stressful situation.
Getting
married again.
Yeah, and often they regret it. There are exceptions, of course. One can't generalize, but boy, it does put a lot of stress on the child.
Is there any aspect of stress that's positive, though?
You know, Mike, in my opinion, the only good stress is short-lived stress.
Huh.
But again, I use the term stress at that point, where the arousal, it's too much, it's over-arousal. You cannot live without arousal. Mm-hmm. I mean, the only time you're not aroused is when you're dead. So by stress, I am meaning too much arousal.
Distress, really.
But distress is now when the pain and the aches begin.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
But that's part of the problem, is we don't have a good phrase for this lower level of stress. But good stress is the stress that when I get up in the morning, I am fresh, I'm energized, I will work hard, I will do a lot all through the day, and then I come down into the valley and I recover, and I allow that recovery. And good stress is this balance between give it all you've got, but then make sure that there's sufficient recovery time.
Hmm.
And if that is unbalanced, if that formula is not balanced, you will pay for it, and that's when the symptoms of stress. And the symptoms of stress tells you that that formula is out of balance. And now for children, I think the key is for parents, is how do you teach a child, as it begins to grow and as it begins to develop some understanding of itself, how do you teach that child to recognize, you know, I haven't had enough sleep. I really am hurting too much. I'm getting sick. I'm going to slow down. I'm going to just sleep in, maybe over the weekend, get a little break, drop this project or that activity so that I live a more balanced life.
Speak specifically to the parent of a hard-driving, type A personality in a child, the straight-A student who would get depressed if they got a B+, who puts such mm-hmm. enormous pressure on themselves to perform.
Yes, but you see, that pressure, although it becomes internalized, originates outside in the parent. And if you have a child like that, then you really have to ask yourself, what message am I sending that child? And perhaps sit down and start a process of educating your child in a more balanced set of expectations and values. I think we have to teach our children that they cannot be good at everything, perfect at everything. Well, maybe even choose a parent who takes a chance and says, look, we're going to choose to do something today that neither you nor I are good at. And we're going to do it just so we can learn that it's okay not to be perfect at something.
Academic institutions reinforce that kind of performance
sure,
in a type A child, too, though. It's
they
not
do.
Just parents, is it? I mean,
it's not just parents. The whole system does.
Teachers, write letters to the parents saying how great the kid is, and
yes.
he gets a lot of reward and feedback.
That's
relatives
right.
say,
yeah.
straight A's, my sure. goodness.
And if a child has it, that's not a problem. But even for the brilliant child, I think that child whose father, say, has been able to communicate to that child that the performance is not the ultimate value. I know you've given it your best. And if you come in with a B-, C+, D, or F, I know you've given it your best, and I will value the same for that. Is teaching that child, is stress-proofing that child. This is what I talk about in the book as stress-proofing. It's like taking a piece of cloth and making it waterproof, dipping it in certain chemicals. We need to take our children and dip them in certain experiences, certain attitudes, certain behaviors that will one day shed the stressors. So a child who knows how to receive criticism positively, constructively, the child who knows how to fail graciously and learns from that failure, the child who understands the role of forgiveness in all of life. I mean, that child has a fantastic set of resources with which to live. And that all directly relates to the stress phenomenon. And it is parents who shape that, who develop that, and then often have to counteract the other influences of the school system and so forth. And we have to be intentional about how we do that educating our children.
I have never found a real good way to put this thought into words, and I'll probably fumble with it today. But for the child who has the other problem, the other end of the continuum from that hard-driving, type-A, straight-A mentality, the child who does not have the self-discipline to carry that daily responsibility, and he's a classic underachiever, that child's under a lot of stress, too. He looks lazy. He looks like he's floating. He looks like he doesn't care. He's often torn up inside because he's not performing, and he knows it.
Yeah, that's right.
When I see one of those youngsters who, by his temperament, does not fit the academic mold,
mm-hmm.
and just, I mean, you can beat him to death, but he is just not that way. It just doesn't function well in school.
No.
I strongly recommend that parents put an arm around that kid and tell him it's okay.
It's okay.
And put the emphasis someplace else. Right. I know educators might not understand that, and and it isn't what they want parents to say. But if a kid can't make it in that world, I'll take him out of that world and let him make it someplace else.
Yes, that's what I call faceting, and I talk about it in the book, where the task of the parent is to help a child identify its strengths. Now, in my opinion, there is no child on God's earth that doesn't have some strengths, some talents that could be developed. Now, that book learning may not be where it's at, but how do you know that child doesn't have tremendous craftsman skills, who couldn't carve or make beautiful furniture or paint
or sing
or dance, or has such a beautiful, couldn't have a beautiful personality that can minister to others? I think that we bring to parenting, and this causes stress in children, preconceived ideas, plans that we've drawn up for how we want our child to turn out. And I think we have
some of that's related to our own peer pressure.
Peer pressure and our own unfulfilled dreams and ideal self. But I think that the parent who can be honest and say, I will start at the point of discovering my child's strengths. And we did this with one of our daughters, where she was the one who didn't have a beautiful singing voice. And, it would have been wonderful if we could all have formed this wonderful quintet, you know. She didn't have a good singing voice, and she was beginning to act out. And then we turned it around, and we began to value the few things she could do and do them well. And suddenly, she began
to
blossom.
See that little flower open up?
It begins to blossom. It's fascinating. It's the process by which you take the dull diamond and you begin to put the bright faces on it and then begin to bring out the brilliance. And every diamond has its own pattern that has to be shaped.
This entire discussion and the entire process of attempting to stress-proof or de-stress your children starts with being able to get behind the eyes of the child and see what he or she is feeling and seeing and feel that emotion and then reacting accordingly, isn't it?
It is that.
Got to get into the world of the child.
And get into the world of the child so you understand it, so you see the world through the child's eyes. And that means slowing down yourself, you see. Take the fast-track parents, where, they're into money and into possessions and both got
or
their jobs
survival,
going.
Or into survival, Arch, just be fair.
Yeah, some of them, but survival is relative, Jim.
Yeah.
For many of them, survival is whether they can keep up payments on the BMW or some other fantastic possession they've got. Sometimes it's not survival that drives fast-track parents, but I think it is a fact that at a certain point in the child's life, many parents just sort of hand them over and are no longer taking a vital personal interest in what that child is doing or how it's managing its life or how it's experiencing stress.
Hmm. The name of the book is Stress in Your Child, Its Causes, Dangers, and Prevention by Dr. Archibald Hart. Good stuff, Arch.
Well,
good practical stuff. We call it nuts and bolts here at Focus on the Family. This is a big book, nearly 250 pages of advice related to this subject, and most of it highly pragmatic. You're dealing with very specific situations.
Right. Lots of work charts in it, lots of tests in it, to really give a parent a handle on the stress life of their child. It's directed to the parents who can shape or destroy a child. It's directed also to how you help your child. What do you do for your child? And so it has that double-barreled focus.
When are you going to write one for teachers so they can recognize stress in their children?
This
subject goes on and on, doesn't it?
Yes, it does.
I mean, it touches all of us one way or another.
Yes, all of us.
Arch, it's always good to have you here. You always have good things to say, good insights to share with us. I appreciate the man you are. You love the Lord, don't you?
I love the Lord.
There's never been any doubt about that.
No, never.
Well, I know you're going to continue writing and send us your manuscripts as you turn them out,
right.
And we'll talk about them here on Focus on the Family.
Yeah, thank you, Jim. Mm-hmm. It's very good to be with you.
You made a long trip over here from Southern California. You used to just drive down the freeway to see
around
us.
The corner, and then you moved on.
We left you.
Now I got to fly.
Consider you one of our primary consultants here. You stay in touch with us, will you?
Thanks, Jim.
You still could drive, just take a little longer. Dr. Arch Hart has been in the studio with us for another edition of Focus on the Family as we've wrapped up this conversation on children and stress. This program is provided by Focus on the Family. Today's producer was John Fuller. Engineering and production were handled by Pete Stokey and Rob Jorgensen. Our executive producer is Bobby Valentine. Our host has been psychologist and author Dr. James Dobson. And I'm Mike Trout, looking forward to having you back when we'll again turn our hearts toward home.